And so I saw a big opportunity to solve that problem, you know, like any crazy entrepreneur, just kind of went for it. If you think about every single cyber attack that you've heard about in the news in the last 15 years, those all had two things in common. The first thing is that all those companies have tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars of technology to try to prevent that cyber attack. The second thing that all of them had in common is that the people who worked in those companies in cyber defense simply didn't know what they were looking for or looking at. Preparation and practice is number one. So, you know, in any risk environment, as you said, people need to know, A, what risk looks like, what it is, what it can be, and have to be prepared for it and not just think they'll know what to do, but how do you actually do that?
Welcome to Secure Access with John Dillard, your front door to the future of compliance, security, and tech. Powered by Sign-In Solutions, we bring you bold conversations with industry leaders who are shaping how organizations protect people, data, and spaces. If you're serious about smarter, safer access, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the podcast, Debbie.
Thank you, John.
And for the folks who are listening, you and I have known each other for a little while, which is kind of cool. I've talked to a lot of folks that I haven't known all that long, or I've only met once or twice, but we've been friends for, gosh, I don't know, maybe
15 years
has got to be, right?
Yeah.
So it's a delight to be able to talk to somebody that I've been able to interact with, not just in security and entrepreneurship, but also in the broader world.
Yeah, likewise.
It's nice. So I'm super excited about this. But I really love to start these conversations just by finding out how people got into this job in the first place. But really, what got you here? How did you end up starting CloudRange? What's the story?
Gosh, a long sordid tale. I actually started my career in the technical education space back in the mid 90s. And it's funny how things come full circle and lots of diversions in the meantime. Previous to CloudRange, I had built and sold an IT asset management company where we managed the disposition of IT assets. And what that means is that we would take servers and any kind of decommissioned IT assets and handle the decommissioning and secure data destruction and recuperation of funds on them, even though they were depreciated. I sold that business in 2016, which was actually more of an e-commerce online auction company. So it's just funny how things evolve and you never know what, you know, kind of turns you're going to take that are going to get you to a certain place. But for me, it's always been about what the market is asking for and just being able to pivot quickly and efficiently. So, yeah, so I sold that in 2016. And then I, you know, you probably know me well enough to know that I don't really sit around and I'll be bored and retired. So that wasn't going to work for me. And so I was waiting for kind of something to show up in my cards. And, you know, people said, what are you going to do next? And I said, I don't know, but when I know, I'll know. And so CloudRange, you know, I was very familiar with the IT world and go to market strategy. And obviously my background in technical education from way back when. There was a lot of opportunity with cyber because there was such a shortage of practical cyber training. There's so much cyber training out there, but the piece that was missing was the hands-on experience part. And it was very clear that large enterprises needed it. The channel didn't have any access to it, and their customers were demanding it and asking for it. The only place it really existed was the military, and it was extremely hardware heavy and resource heavy, and it wasn't something that was useful for the rest of the world. And so I saw a big opportunity to solve that problem. And, you know, like any crazy entrepreneur, just kind of went for it.
Awesome. And it's kind of cool. Because of the asset disposition experience you had, that's not entirely, I mean, yes, it's a digital problem, but it's also a physical problem.
Yeah.
So you were coming at this not necessarily as a cyber native, was more holistic, you know, asset security, information security. See kind of how that played. I'm just curious how that played into how you approached CloudRange.
So the Venn diagram that I live in is very much go to market strategy. And what I was doing before you know, a lot of the same partners that I had then were just selling something a little different for the ultimate end result is security, albeit very different. Cybersecurity readiness training is very different than decommissioning servers and storage. But at the end of the day, it goes toward the same objective.
Yeah. Well, now remind everybody for their benefit a little bit about what CloudRange does. You've touched on it a little bit. What you guys do, where you are as a company, where are you in this journey?
Great. Thank you. So CloudRange, our mission statement, to start with that, is that we make organizations battle ready. If you think about a flight simulators help pilots test for different situations in a safe environment so that when they're flying a real plane, they're not going to not know what to do when something terrible happens. Cybersecurity is very similar. With all of the different threat groups and APTs, there's so many ways that organizations can be attacked. And at the end of the day, every cyber defender, a SOC analyst or incident responder, they're only as good as the experience that they have. And it's not their fault. So if you think about every single cyber attack that you've heard about in the news in the last 15 years, those all had two things in common. The first thing is that all those companies have tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars of technology to try to prevent that cyber attack. The second thing that all of them had in common is that the people who worked in those companies in cyber defense simply didn't know what they were looking for or looking at. They just didn't know, so they weren't able to detect it and respond to it and remediate it quickly enough. And obviously, there are costs associated with that. And so I saw a huge opportunity to address that problem. It's not the typical cyber training where you go and do labs and get certifications. That's table stakes. But it's how do you actually know what to do, when to do it, why to do it, and how to do it, and even with whom to do it, because cyber defense is very much of a team sport. But it had to be dynamic. Going back to my early career in the mid-90s, I was in the technical education space around networking certification. So if you remember CNEs and MCSEs, those are networking certifications. If somebody got one of those, you can qualify to get a job. You can get that job. You can do that job, and you could probably do that job for a long time pretty well. And cyber is completely different because it's changing every single day. So we had to come up with a way to create a dynamic environment and be able to reflect these different threats. So to answer your question, what is this thing? What do we do? We have a platform called a CyberRange. It's a virtual platform. It's all cloud-based. And it represents an organization's network. So it's a real multi-segment network. This isn't a video game. It's real. It's just not a customer's actual network. We have partnerships with all of the major cybersecurity tool manufacturers. So, you know, the SIM, the firewalls, EDRs, et cetera. And they're licensed in there. So if somebody logs onto our CyberRange, they're actually interacting with the tools that they use day to day. There's thousands of events per second of traffic running through it. And then what makes it valuable is that we're designing and scripting cyber attacks through it. Unlike a breach and attack simulation product where it's attacking a production network to find vulnerabilities, we're actually a completely segregated platform. We don't touch anything on a customer's network. So go back to thinking about a flight simulator. It's totally separate and safe. And the cyber defenders, usually SOC analysts, engineers, incident responders, they log in at a certain time. They don't know what they're looking for because in real life, the bad guys don't call you and say, hey, we're going to attack you. Go look for this. So they just see stuff. They see noise and traffic. And then they spend a few hours having to detect, investigate, respond, and remediate that attack. And they're measured on all sorts of different things, which ultimately are a risk indicator specific to being prepared for specific cyber attacks. And so whereas most training products are geared toward what it can do for an individual, ours is about readiness of the organization because all of our reporting reflects the readiness of the organization and how quickly and effectively the team detects and responds to things, which for boards and C-suites is extremely important.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And it comes back to a piece of your background, and we didn't touch on this. I mean, your education is actually in organizational and human factor stuff, if I recall.
Human and organizational development.
So it's interesting that you're approaching this from the humans being, I mean, the humans are kind of the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't want to come back to the difficulties of cyber attacks in general and the compressing timeframes in a minute, but I would love to hear your take on how that informs how you've approached this problem. You know, as an organizational development person by training, you know, obviously you're deep in cyber, but you seem to have not lost the point that the humans are a little bit of the weak spot.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting that you brought that up because, first of all, trained in organizational development is a big statement. You know, I had a lot of fun in college. So how much?
I'm sure. You were Vanderbilt, I think. I'm sure you probably took at least one hard class.
I did.
It was.
Yes.
You must be pretty smart.
Well, thank you. So it's funny, though, because when I founded CloudRange, and I will never forget this one moment, I was watching one of our Fortune 60, big healthcare company, I won't name them. I was actually observing one of their teams, we call them missions, it's a simulation. And I was watching and observing the people interacting with each other. And, you know, you have an incident commander and a report writer and all these elements of a team. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. My, you know, small group behavior training and organizational development, all this stuff are now crossing paths with cybersecurity. And never did I think that it did never occur to me. And it turns out that, yes, you said about people are the weakest link in the chain, whether it's people, you regular users clicking on a phishing email. But at the end of the day, the SOC analysts and incident responders, those are the goalies. Those are the folks who are truly the last line of defense and truly the weakest link in the chain, because if they don't know how to detect and respond to something, it's all over. And so what we have observed is that the communication, collaboration, creativity, all these C words about how these teams are interacting is truly what makes or breaks them. They have to have the technical skills and acumen, but if they're not communicating and collaborating effectively, they're not going to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we see it firsthand. I'll tell you a really quick story on that. We had a customer with one team in the US and another team in another country. I'm not going to name the country. For all intents and purposes, equal. It was a follow the sun model. So same functions, just different times of day. We used to conduct these simulations on one team, and then the next day we would do the other team. The US team always outperformed the other one. It had nothing to do, and it wasn't a competition, but we were just noticing that it was so different, and we were able to see why. Because of cultural reasons, the other team didn't communicate the same way. And it affected very negatively their detection and response times, because they would see something, but they wouldn't say something about it unless they were 100% sure. And there was very little collaboration. It was fascinating how the human behavior affects it.
You know, the coolest thing about doing this podcast, because I've talked to a bunch of folks now, and not all are cyber. I mean, some of these folks are personnel security. Some of them are physical security, executive protection, kind of the whole range. It's the same stuff. I mean, there are some things about cyber for sure that are unusual, but guests come back over and over again to this fundamental truth that people and the way that they adapt to risk environments, regardless of what the subject matter or the context is pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that and whether, I mean, you obviously are focused on cyber and that's a market choice, but what, I mean, for people who are doing training of all security types, I mean, it could be physical personnel, visitor management, traditional InfoSec, what would you tell them about what you've learned? I mean, this mix of organizational behavior, team dynamics, and security in general. What do you think the key lessons are? I mean, as it relates to people and how these disciplines are really not all that different.
Preparation and practice is number one. So, you know, in any risk environment, as you said, people need to know, A, what risk looks like, what it is, what it can be, and have to be prepared for it and not just think they'll know what to do, but how do you actually do that? And so, you know, it's, you can unlock a door, but do you know where the key is to that door when you go, need to go unlock it? And so it's all about preparation. Communication is so key, and that goes into the preparation, but especially I'll stereotype a little bit, you know, in the cyber world, the people might communicate less naturally. And so it's really important that they're given the opportunity to get out of their comfort zone. And that's what it is often, is just it's not in their comfort zone when they realize that they can be really good at something and that, you know, cybersecurity isn't just about technology. It's pretty great to watch people blossom like that. Risk is everywhere in a business. You know that. I think the first thing is making sure people know what that looks like. What does it look like to be attacked? What does it look like if you're attacked and how does that affect the company? Because it helps people make better decisions.
Yeah.
If they know the context of it also, rather than just what their single siloed job might be.
Right. Right. Well, and it, as it relates to, since you brought up risk, a couple of things I'd love to pull a thread on with you is I'm guessing that, I mean, that's the primary motivation for your buyers, the customers that you're serving. I mean, that's, they're doing this because they want to reduce risk. What do you think that they mean when they say that?
When they say that they want to reduce risk?
When they want to reduce risk, what does that typically mean for your customers?
That's the eternal question. Well, from a human standpoint, and this is not a official line item of risk management, but when we talk to a security leader, risk to them is they go to bed at night and they don't know whether their team is prepared to defend against an attack. And that's risk for them. They feel unsafe, not from a cyber safe standpoint, but they don't feel safe that the people that work for them know what they're doing. They don't have evidence that they do know what they're doing. In their own roles, they can reduce risk by seeing evidence that their team is prepared and by using CloudRange and going through these simulations. As a company, reducing risk, if a board member of a public company reads something in the news or hears something in the news about another company in their industry that just had a massive breach, the first thing they're going to do is call the CISO and say, can this happen to us? How do we know that this isn't going to happen to us? Yeah. And then the CISO can say, well, you know what? We've been using CloudRange and we just did this. We just simulated this attack last week. And, you know, our benchmarks were better than industry and we're good to go. Boom. Right. And so a lot of times risk is just emotion and perception because there's obviously a lot of risk quantification. And that's, you know, a separate industry or a separate space within the industry. But risk is also a very emotional thing. And so for us, it's a combination of addressing that and having, you know, security leaders and boards feel safe that they have confidence and evidence that their teams are prepared to defend against stuff. But then there's also, you know, objective things. So we use the MITRE ATT&CK framework, for example. And so we can show that different tactics, techniques, and procedures and combinations thereof have been successfully defended against. And that's what a lot of our attacks are based on, the MITRE ATT&CK framework and the MITRE ATT&CK framework for ICS and OT environments. And so they can see that, okay, we have checked these boxes, for lack of a better term. And then the third thing is, you mentioned compliance. So we're doing a lot these days on making sure that the market knows that just because you're required to do a tabletop exercise or two tabletop exercises a year or show your incident response plan or test your incident response plan, however it's written in different industries, checking a box is not enough. And so we have seen such a huge demand for what we actually have a product called Tabletop 2.0. And so it takes a traditional tabletop exercise, which, you know, you get a lot of eye rolling when people have to go through them. But if you think about it, a tabletop exercise in most cases, something already has happened and you get people assembled and, you know, okay, CEO, what do you do? Okay, chief legal officer, what do you do? Okay, you know, marketing, PR, you have the media calling you and how do you respond? You're watching your ticker tank and all these things. But what happened to get you there? And so what we've developed on our CyberRange is the prequel to a traditional tabletop exercise. And if we make it unsolvable, that then carries over to bringing the executives in and all the non-technical people. So we've seen a lot of companies adopt our platform instead of just doing a traditional tabletop exercise because it tells the whole story and it gets everyone to understand not just what to do if something bad happens, but how do you get to that point of something bad happening and how can you minimize the risks of that happening? So We're working in several different industries now to connect the dots for organizations who are typically just checking the box. And now they can do a very enhanced and industry-specific simulation that checks the box for tabletop exercises, but is a lot more effective.
That's interesting. And I really think it's interesting that you led with the emotional risk component, which has absolutely been my experience too. The first risk conversations with a lot of our customers were always how they felt about the situation and the real visceral fear of A, not having a terrible thing happening, and B, having that terrible thing happening make them look very foolish, which are all emotional things. Like they're not even
thinking the legal about aspect of it too.
And consequence and all the traditional risk management stuff. I mean, yeah, but it starts with this emotional perception of risk about attacks and threats and what the terrible things that can happen in the Washington Post articles and all the other things.
And people even ending up in jail.
Yeah.
Well,
and to what extent, I mean, just out of curiosity, I mean, do you find that before you work with teams, especially companies that maybe have less mature programs and certainly don't name any names, but some are better than others, how often do you find that they just don't fully appreciate the seriousness of the threat environment? Well, they think that it's made up or not real or theoretical.
Nobody doesn't need what we have. You know, it's just a matter of budget prioritization. You know, everyone needs to. I mean, that's a human thing. That has nothing to do with cybersecurity. But I had a chief information security officer of a very small state of the United States.
They're all pretty big, but, you know, it could be geographic. So I think we could narrow it down, but we'll try.
And I'll say they said, we're good. You know, we're not going to be attacked. And I have a team and they have a bunch of certifications. And I'm like, okay, I don't live there. I've got other fish to fry. I'm not going to fight this battle. And that was such an exception. And I just remember it. I remember it was in person. I remember where I was standing and I was like, oh God, you have fun with that. But in general, John, I think everybody today, very different than 10 years ago, but everybody today knows it's a when, not an if. And that is very different because it used to be that security leaders thought there was, you know, people who thought that technology solves all problems. And then there are people who think, okay, technology and compliance solves all problems. But now it's the people, what's true and in vogue is that people are realizing that it's the people and that's the three-legged stool and that it is a win. And any security leader, and I think it also has to do with our customer base is large enterprises and governments.
They're fairly sophisticated most of the time.
I think by virtue of that, the people who we're interacting with are realistic. You know, they're not the people who are posing as security leaders and don't actually know what they're doing.
Well,
they're pretty realistic.
On the threat environment, I mean, and we touched on this at the very beginning of the conversation, how frequently it changes. Rick and Mach 37, we would talk about playbook life cycles, meaning, you know, cyber attacks, really, and this applies to any attack, not just cyber, but cyber is certainly the most acute, where, you know, 6 months, 12 months, and that time cycle compressing. And this was back in 16, 17, 18. What's your perception of how frequently the threat environment changes? How does that change how companies think about training when we're now down to days and weeks maximum of how often these attack playbooks change and how frequently adversaries change their tactics, maybe even in real time? How do you train against that problem?
Well, that's why what we do is so important because our team is using real-time threat intelligence to then determine and prioritize what different types of attacks we need to recreate and roll out to our customers to help them stay ahead because they know things are changing. They're playing whack-a-mole every day, or, you know, the market. There's so many tools and technologies. There's different threat groups. There's so much for them to keep up with. So we'd kind of do the job for them of saying, okay, here's what's most important. And you were talking about risk. Like, what is your industry specifically most at risk for? And help them prioritize and help us prioritize what goes into our threat library. And so when we roll that out to customers, it's going to be fresh and new and something that they've only heard about on the news. And now they can actually interact with it.
Now, in your view, does AI, obviously, I'm sure every investor and customer talks to you about it. on the one hand, it's making things worse because they're the adversaries who have it too, that have all kinds of new tools and techniques they didn't have before. Mm-hmm. We also have new tools and techniques that we can deploy against it, which are AI enabled themselves. Mm-hmm. Do these things cancel each other out? Is it about the same? How do you feel about the whole thing?
I'm not going to say they cancel each other out. Everything you just said is very true. AI makes things harder for defenders because they might be moving faster, but even more a reason for them to be prepared and know what to do. Our customers are craving AI attacks and they get AI attacks from us. It's just a quicker, more effective way for them to be attacked. On the defense side, there's so many ways that AI is being used. And I think in any, not just cyber defense, but really in any job, AI is a facilitator. AI is an expediter, but people still have to know how to communicate with it and how to interpret it and how to think critically about it. And so just the other day, I was talking to the head of cybersecurity at a university, and they're really trying to work on what kind of curriculum to add. And they want to add a huge piece on AI. And he said, well, aren't all these companies letting go their low-level analysts because of AI? And I said, absolutely not. AI is not taking their place. AI is making them move up so they can do more thought work. AI is doing the grunt work, if you will. And then by the time it gets to the person, that person has more valid information to look through than looking through a bunch of noise. I mean, just to put it simply.
Yeah.
And so if you think about any innovation in history, you know, the internet, you and I were both alive for a long time when the internet came around. It's no different. It helps make things easier. You know, Instead of having to drive to the library, you just go on the internet. So it's going to make things easier. It just elevates people to do more thought work.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, how does that relate? And maybe not at all, or they're one and the same topic. Skills gaps, which obviously, I mean, you're in the business of skills gaps fundamentally. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're trying to get a company from A to B on some domain that they need to fill in order to protect themselves. So
All right. How
do you think about individual company skill gaps and in general in the market space, cyber and security skills gaps? And what do you feel like the most pronounced issues are? Is AI a big part of that, or is it just one of many things that you've got to focus on?
AI is a piece of everything right now.
Yeah.
So we don't ignore it. But in terms of the skills gaps in companies, it's a big discussion because organizations are now having to, and really for the last several years, have acknowledged that they have to grow their own talent. They can't go and find the unicorn and bring it in. They have to grow their own. And so they're not just looking at skills gaps, but they're looking at what do they need to start from zero to hero for bringing in talent. But where we are focused primarily is what I refer to as the experience gap, because you can have all sorts of skills. Like you can know how to play baseball in terms of the rules. You can know how to throw a ball. You can know how to hit a ball. You can know how to slide. But if you're put in a game and you've never played a game before, can you actually do that? And so that's why it takes experience. And so that's where we're focused. Now, in order to have that experience, you still need skills. And so we worked backwards over the years to where we started off providing our simulation platform, our CyberRange, but then customers also were craving specific skills to help enhance the individual's effectiveness while doing the team simulations. And so we brought in some what we call flex labs. They're individual asynchronous training labs for individual skill development. So it has, I mean, organizations have to think of knowledge, skills, abilities, knowledge, skills, experience, whatever you want to, however you want to refer to it, but it has to be all pieces of that. And when CloudRange came into the market in 2018, for the most part, the only training that was out there was knowledge and skills based. So it was knowing the rules of baseball by reading the book, knowing how to throw and how to hit and how to slide, but never having played in a game. And that's the part that we filled.
That's pretty neat. So in your view, I mean, obviously you're working with pretty big companies and they have pretty mature programs. Is experience still the biggest problem in your view? Or are skills so, I mean, is the environment changing so fast that skills are almost irrelevant? I mean, the skills that you might build right now, it's almost like learning how to code in college. By the time you get out, it's over. So it has more to do with the way you think and the way that you solve problems than it does to do with any particular set of skills you learn. Is that true in cyber?
Well,
am I oversimplifying?
You still need skills because you can't get on a baseball field if you don't know how to throw. I mean, you can, but you'll be kicked off. And you still need all that. And the focus now is on making sure that those skills are applied and tested and battle tested and tested again. And the difference today, and kind of going back to my early career, is that the skills and abilities that somebody needs today are based on what's happening in the wild. And that's what changes every day. And so, yeah, the fundamental skills are necessary, but what changes every day is what they have to defend against, what they have to understand, what they have to look for. And that's, you know, there's skills associated with each of those, but it's also awareness and exposure and just knowing, you know, creating that muscle memory and situational awareness to be able to look for the right things and act quickly and effectively.
All right. I want to switch gears a little bit. And I have the benefit of knowing some stuff about you that my guess is that your customers and investors also don't know about you. And that is the breadth of your leadership experience. I'm talking about your leadership experience. And, you know, you and I kind of grew up together in entrepreneurs organization. I think you founded three companies, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
You have been a leader of leaders in these organizations. I know you have done leadership coaching. You help organizations, in some cases all over the world probably, pull together how they're going to think about solving problems outside of your own company and the things that you've done yourself. So, I mean, it's a pretty interesting background, and I've had a chance to kind of see it play out, and, you know, it would be a shame not to share it with the world. So I wanted to kind of get you to tell a little bit of your story on just on straight leadership and what you've learned and what your leadership journey has been, what kinds of organizations you've seen in your career, and really just things that will help this audience understand the lessons that they might be able to take into their leadership journeys themselves, because you've just had a ton of experience.
Well, thank you. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is leadership is like golf. You're never done being good at it, and you have to continue to practice. That's my number one focus, is leadership. It's being genuine. Everyone thinks they're genuine, just like everyone thinks they have a sense of humor and everyone thinks they're a good driver. Most people are going to probably say they're genuine too, but you know, you're either genuine or you're not, and people know it. I have it no other way, just because I think it would be too hard to live in a world where you're trying to be somebody else. But over the years, just in my own leadership journey, not the leadership coaching I've done and different roles I've held, it's understanding people's strengths, truly wanting to grow with them and watch them grow. And that's something that's a joy. You know, leadership, when you have the right team, is a joy. It's not hard when you're genuine and you have great people. But the foundation of that comes from alignment. And you and I, you know, we've both done a ton of strategic planning, and it all starts with making sure everyone is aligned on why we do what we do, how we do what we do, and just our ultimate vision. And then allowing smart, awesome people the flexibility to get there within living the values of the company. And so, you know, I'm in my 50s. We all have imposter syndrome still, you know. It's just that. But even listening to you say the things you were just saying about me, I'm like, who's he talking about?
Oh, what?
But yeah, it's a journey. Everyone is going to have their own style. And it's also really important to get feedback from the people you lead, just to, you know, see how to lead them best and how they consume your leadership. I did a fun thing. Let me share this with you. We use AI note takers for a lot of our meetings, and they do transcripts also. So I took one of the transcripts and I deleted my company name in it. And it was an internal meeting. There were like four or five people on it. I deleted our company name, just put in some junk name onto it and put it into ChatGPT and asked it about my leadership style. And it was so fascinating, the results of it. And I ran it by my VP of operations and I was like, you know, is this, what do you think about this? She said, that's spot on. And it also said how people consume my leadership and things I can tell people about how to consume my leadership. So I recommend anyone listening to this to do that, because, you know, you're never going to get a person telling you completely transparently. I mean, there's certain people, but there's always going to be a little bit of a filter. But ChatGPT is the most honest friend you'll ever have. I'll tell you that.
Well, I have also heard that after the 3D prompts, it will start lying to you to make you so that you like it more. I don't know if that's true.
I don't know.
But if it starts complimenting too much, I start to get suspicious.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, they weren't compliments. I mean, it was all very matter of fact.
So one thing that I think a lot of listeners to this, because these are folks, and the folks who are listening are generally pretty senior in security in some capacity. And there are these three contexts of leadership. One is how we lead our teams, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of like, you know, the obvious one. The second one is how we lead our peers, which you and I, this is how you and I met, right? So we're in these peer organizations where it's a different animal. And then the third is how we lead customers, right? And how we persuade folks who are always trying to sell something. I mean, that's part of growing a business. Even if you're in security, you're part of a business that's trying to sell a product to a customer.
Yeah.
How does your style differ across those three, if at all? Or what are the things that you do differently and maybe some things that you do that are similar in those three contexts?
I like how you broke those out. So, you know, we all become our parents at some point, whether we like it or not.
My children tell me on a regular basis.
I used to be so annoyed when I was a kid because I'd ask my dad, hey, can you help me with this math problem? And instead of helping me get to the answer, he'd pretty much tell me how numbers were invented and all this stuff. I've become that, you know, and so how I lead is very much, I want everyone to understand context. I don't want them to just be focused on their own role, but I want them to understand the why. And so I teach people things and I enjoy that for one thing, but I like to enlighten people so that they can make better decisions and be on the train, because that's just going to be much better for an organization. So I think that's with my team and my peers too. I don't hold back. I'm very assertive and I question everything. I hired a new head of product the other day and I said, I am always going to poke holes in everything that you bring to me first. And it's nothing personal. It's just, I have to get a clean slate and understand stuff before I can make decisions on it. It's just my style. It's critical thinking. In terms of leading customers, I love that question, John, because we talk about this all the time at CloudRange. Our job is to teach customers something. We at CloudRange do this every day and we do this for a living. Our customers don't do what we do for a living. So our job is to teach our customers what works, teach them something new that they haven't had time to figure out. So have them understand that this is a priority and now there's a solution for it. It's to guide them through the process. I paint the picture of ballroom dancing with my customers. We're the leader and they're just following along. They don't have to think and make big decisions. We're going to guide them and we're going to teach them. Until you ask the question, I never really thought about it in terms of my own leadership style, but obviously a founder's style, whether it's culture, leadership, or anything, sales, is going to filter down at the company. But that is how we interact with our customers. We're very helpful and nothing makes me happier than when a customer wants us to be successful and, you know, says, hey, could you do this? This would be really helpful. Or when they jump on the opportunity to be on our customer advisory board. I know everyone thinks that, oh, they treat their customers like partners and blah, blah, blah. But like, that's truly how we feel about our customers. And we know they feel about us just because of the way we engage them, because we've taught them something and we continue to teach them something. And at the end of the day, it does not matter what product anyone is selling, what solution is selling. If you can make somebody's life easier, you have won.
Yeah, that's awesome. Really ties in nicely to one of the things that the CEO of the company that bought ThreatSwitch, which is Sinus Solutions, sponsor of this podcast, by the way, would talk often about. And it's something I didn't really think about because, you know, ThreatSwitch was mostly a security compliance product. And Sinus Solutions, as part of that broader family, it's a comprehensive way of interacting with visitors and delivering security in the context of that. And he started talking about experience and positive experiences with visitors and guests and people outside of our customers' organizations. Mm-hmm. And it took me a minute to get it. Then when we started to live it a little bit more, we realized that everybody in the security business is the first line of customer experience for most companies. The way that you interact with, in your customer's case, is the first people who interact with the company, they're crossing the perimeter of the network, or they're crossing the physical perimeter of the facility, the same thing. If that experience is terrible, they're going to have a very negative feeling about the company. So this leadership style question, I love getting into how security leaders think about customer relationships. And I've been fortunate because a couple of our guests, and you have added to a stellar lineup on this point, great security leaders understand customer relationships in a very intimate way. And they understand that experience and security are not that far from each other. So we'll just love to hear you talk about that. And I want to ask you a little bit too about where, well, a two-parter here. One is certainly where cybersecurity is headed, what's around the corner, because I love to close out conversations with that kind of content, but specifically cloud and range. So these two things are happening at the same time. What's coming around the corner in general for cybersecurity in your view, based on where you're sitting as an educator, a trainer, or a person who's trying to help companies fill these gaps? And how is cloud range changing? I mean, what is the growth plan for you guys to adapt to that as those things happen?
Yeah, so cybersecurity just continues to get more complex. It's getting harder with AI. Everybody is at risk, large companies, small companies. So it's for us as a company, the market opportunity is not going to go away. It's scary because the threats aren't going to go away and they're just getting even more complex. Security is now one of the, if not the largest function in a largest budget item in a company, because it just, you know, without it, it puts the company at risk. For Cloud Range, so we've been around 7 years and continuing to have very consistent growth. We work mostly with large enterprises, government agencies, state governments, and then we also have a separate division that serves higher education. We're actually implementing our platform, or we do implement our platform in university curriculum. That when students are learning cybersecurity, now they're getting the hands-on experience so that they can be employable. Same platform, and goes to our mission statement of making organizations battle ready, but we're making the students who will eventually be employed in an organization and will help make them battle ready. So where we're continuing to expand is both on the higher ed side. We have a really amazing partnership there with a large company, IBM. And so we've been working with them on a program called Cyber Campus that we rolled out last year. On the commercial side of the business, we're adding a lot more cloud content, AI attacks, enhancing a lot of the tabletop 2.0, which is the non-paper-based tabletop exercises using our technology. And then also one of the areas that I have been excited about that we launched a couple of years ago is the OT side of the business, the critical infrastructure OT side, because that is where, as you probably know, it's not about data risk. It's about our life safety and being able to live and have power and water. And those attacks on critical infrastructure are by far the most threatening, at the same time, most at risk, because the alignment of OT and IT in organizations is so disjointed. I shouldn't even call it alignment. It's misalignment or lack of alignment. There's not a whole lot of training yet in that side of the world, the fundamental training. And so we see a lot of opportunity there to build some of that out as well. Right now, we have OT cyber ranges for, you know, we have the third largest energy company in the world. We have large critical infrastructure, but there's so much training that every other company needs in order to help that convergence of OT and IT. So that's a big part of where this is going. You'll see a lot more funding coming out for attacks on critical infrastructure, or for defensive attacks on critical infrastructure.
That's really interesting. I mean, and one of the things, as a follow-up, I have kind of a working hypothesis that the distinctions between these different flavors of security, I mean, cybersecurity is a word we started to use, I don't know, how many years ago, maybe?
After InfoSec. Yeah. First, it was information security and it, cyber.
I mean, I think there are some folks out there who have correctly pointed out a little bit of an arbitrary distinction. And then these walls between different security domains kind of need to dissolve. And the only way you solve those kind of, especially critical infrastructure, which is by definition a hybrid information physical problem, It's about people moving in and out. It's about materials. It's about machines doing machine things, literally yep. bending metal. And of course, the information systems that support all those things. So what is your view on that? I mean, what's your reaction to that? My hot take there, that these distinctions need to dissolve in security and we need to have a multidisciplinary view of how to solve these problems. And did that change how you do training? Do you see, you know, Cloud Range maybe doing things that go beyond cyber in the future? How does that play out?
That's a good question. We are asked by one of our customers in that space that they want to do a simulation for a complete outage, whether it was caused by a hurricane or by a cyber attack.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter where it comes from. And so we have to plan for all of that. And as a leader, as a CEO of Cloud Range, my job is to say, you can do anything, but you can't do everything. And so how do we stay in our lane or do we expand? I love opportunities to make those kinds of decisions, to say yes or to say no.
Yeah, that's great. That's the best problem.
Yeah.
No. You're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Cool.
But you're right, though. I mean, it's security. Risk is, and even a higher level from that is risk. I mean, it's all risk, whether it's financial risk, competitive risk, you know, cyber risk, weather risk, it all flows up to risk.
Cool. Makes sense. All right. Time for some rapid fire. Now, just for everybody's benefit, I have not run these questions by you in advance. They are intended to be quick, pithy responses. So we'll see how you do. I'm not going to score these. They're not. It is not a game show.
Okay. I'm ready.
Maybe I should score. We'll see how you do, and then we'll see if we should apply a score to them. All right. First one. What's the most important misconception that we all have about cyber training? Misconception.
That it's something that is consumed by individuals for certifications.
That's a good answer. I like that one. All right, next one. The dumbest mistake that most of us are making.
I think in cyber specifically, crossing fingers and hoping nothing bad happens.
Good one. All right.
Or delaying. Delay, yeah. Kick the can down the road.
All right, next one. What's your go-to? I mean, you're doing simulations a lot. What's your go-to strategy to reduce risk under pressure? What's the pressure reduction tactic that is most effective?
Preparation.
How about that? This came right off the top.
That's what we do.
All right, last one. Favorite restaurant in Nashville?
Henrietta Red.
I've never been there.
Well, you should.
What is it?
It's actually owned by two brothers, Ben and Max Goldberg. They own a bunch of restaurants in Nashville and have done very well. Ben's an EO member as well.
Oh, Henrietta Red.
It's great.
All right.
I have a lot of favorite restaurants there. I'm not a good favorite answerer.
Well, cool. All right. I will give you the floor. I want to give you a chance to share any final thoughts just based on the run of our conversation, and then we'll wrap it up here. Based on our flow and the range of things we've talked about, what's the one thing that you want everybody to know who's listening?
Well, of course, I'm going to do shameless plug for Cloud Range.
CloudRangeCyber.com, by the way.
Yes, CloudRangeCyber.com. We are extremely proud of our growth and our customers and the adoption of what we do. Simulation training is not something that should be an option, and companies are adopting it. It's becoming a standard. If you think about any life safety field, there is some sort of simulation involved in it, whether it's emergency management, law enforcement, fire, or even aviation. People are using simulation to do their job, and it's a requirement. We love seeing that organizations are adopting this, and it's becoming a standard. Boards love it. C-suites love it. And what I love about it is the SOC analysts that are going through it, they love it. So it's not that they have to do it. They actually feel like they get to do it because they are able to be immersed in things, something that they've only seen and heard, they've only heard about. And they're not going to take the company down if they make a mistake. And so it's a really huge accelerant to people's growth and the development. And it's an amazing investment in people with obviously risk reduction as the end result.
Perfect. And I assume that you got a positive SOC report yourself here.
Yeah.
Based on drinking your own Kool-Aid.
Yes. Yes. We definitely want to drink our own Kool-Aid. Thank you for having me, though.
It's been an absolute delight having you. Hopefully we'll do it again. Sometime in the future. It's been awesome just to catch up and to hear the stories, not just about Cloud Range, but also about you and your leadership style, because you're the best at this stuff. It's always fantastic.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Debbie.
Likewise.
Thanks for joining us on Secure Access, brought to you by Sign In Solutions. If you found today's conversation insightful, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. For more on transforming compliance, security, and workplace experiences, visit signinsolutions.com. Until next time, stay secure, stay informed,